Hi, welcome to BCI Cattle Chat. I'm Brad White. Happy to have you with us listening today and happy to have a full crew here in the studio. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning, Philip.
Hello.
Brian.
Morning, everybody.
And we have Dr. Ted Schroeder with us from the Ag Econ Department here at K-State. Morning, Ted.
Good morning.
So Ted has worked with us for a long time. We're happy to have him with us, and we've got a good show planned for today where we're going to be discussing several topics, including some research that Ted and Philip and I have been a part of on sustainability and beef production, and then a project that Ted and Bob have been working on herd records for cow-calf. And we'll also end up talking a little bit about feeder calf pricing. What are some of the things that affect that? So looking forward to getting into those topics. If you want to find out a little more in depth on some of the topics we talk about, you can listen to the Bovine Science with BCI podcast, or you can also sign up for our newsletter if you send us an email at bci@ksu.edu. Before we get into our topics for the day, I got to tell you guys, we have a new item at our house. We got a new oven. I found out when our old oven went out that my wife used it for more than what I used it for, which was cooking frozen pizza. So there's several other items that come in there. So now I'm all excited about baked oven goods. I want to know your favorite as we go into fall, not a main dish, but what's your favorite baked thing that comes out of the oven?
Pie.
That's easy. Pie. Absolutely.
Philip is on it today.
Apple pie, cherry pie, peach pie.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter too much to me. Pie.
Pie better than cobbler?
Oh, I do cobbler too, but
they're the same.
They're just different kind of forms of the same ingredients.
Obviously, you guys have never used an oven. If you think cobbler and pie are the same thing, you've never, ever used an oven.
Brian, what's your...
Mine is cinnamon rolls because it goes with chili. So yeah. It is the side dish to chili.
Ted?
I only smoke and grill. I don't know anything about it. I honestly don't even know what goes in it. My wife won't let me touch it. So, you know, I just eat whatever's there and cook what I want beyond that.
on the smoker.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you and Dustin together. That's what Dustin would have said, too. One of the things that we wanted to talk about today, we hear a lot about sustainability. And sustainability in the beef production system. Philip, you're a part of a group that's the U.S. Roundtable for Sustainable Beef. One of the questions that has frequently arisen is, what is sustainability and what does it mean? And that can be addressed to either producers or consumers. One of the cool things, and Ted, I applaud you for taking this on, because we want to find out what's that connection between what consumers want and what beef producers are actually doing. So I'm going to start this conversation by, Philip, maybe give us an overview of, there's some categories of sustainability, where sustainability for beef production. Tell us what those categories are, and then I'm going to ask Ted about what he found on some of the survey work.
So typically, we categorize sustainability in what we call three pillars. So there's the economic pillar, which has to do with profitability at the ranch level, economic activity in the community and things like that. There's what we call the social pillar, and that has to do with things like antibiotic stewardship, animal welfare, and just the general public's perception of an industry, not just beef production, but just any industry. And then there's the environmental pillar, which is the one we seem to hear the most about and kind of think the most about, I think, when we hear the word sustainability, but it involves like greenhouse gases, water quality, soil health, all those type of things.
So Ted, one of the things we had a conversation early on, and you mentioned for beef producers to implement changes and hit sustainability metrics, often there are costs associated, and finding out if those different metrics have different costs, are they meaningful to consumers? So you and one of your students, Elias, who worked together to put together a survey, and we talked about that as well. What are some of the thought process that goes into it, and how did that research go?
Well, one of the most important things first, I think, to put in context is, where does sustainability and the components that Philip mentioned around sustainability, where do those rank in terms of consumer preferences? And while they are important, there are some other components that the consumer absolutely demands that beef products have. Whether one labels them sustainability or not is up for debate, but items that we've done as we've done survey work, and we've done a lot of consumer survey work, including the study that you're referencing. But right away, what we see is some of the major factors consumers want first before they even will purchase and continue to purchase a product is first that it is fresh. Now, freshness has a lot of connotations to it, but freshness, price, the cost of the product, the taste, the flavor of the product, and the safety of the product. Those four categories always rank as the top items that consumers just expect that product to deliver as well as be valued at as they make purchase decisions.
So those items are always, in multiple surveys, those are what's going to come out on top. And one of your questions was, where do these sustainability, whether it's the environmental metrics Philip talked about or some of the animal welfare, where do they rank relative to those top four?
Absolutely. You know, and again, not to say that safety of food or price of food are not related to sustainability. Obviously, they are. But as you start to drill down to things like, the environmental aspects of beef and beef production, routinely, especially things such as greenhouse gas type of concerns, consumers do not rank those highly as things they're concerned about or that are most important to them as they make beef purchase versus other purchase decisions.
Yeah, and in this study, you surveyed thousands of consumers across the country and tried to target a variety of areas, and you ask all these questions and had them rank. So when you say the greenhouse gas didn't rank as high, was that surprising, Philip, as you went into this study? Because we went into it thinking we hear a lot about greenhouse. We go to a beef production meeting, it's sustainability. You hear a lot about greenhouse gas. Was it surprising to you where it ranked?
Yeah, I was surprised. U.S. Roundtable talks a lot about greenhouse gases and methane, and a lot of the focus on beef sustainability has been around greenhouse gas emissions and methane. And so, you know, that's what we see a lot in the media related to beef production. And so I was pretty surprised that when we got the results of this survey, that was the least important attribute by far of consumers.
So which of the sustainability attributes, Ted, came up as higher? I know none of them ranked higher than our price or flavor or food safety, but which of the sustainability was toward the top?
One that's shown up for a long time, and fortunately the beef industry has a good record on this, but it's animal welfare. Consumers do show concern about animals being raised in ways that they view as appropriate and proper for the production system. So that's one is there. Another one that does show up in most of our work. Again, it's not as high ranked as the others, but concerns over things such as antibiotic use in animal production, as well as synthetic hormone use. I think those might have be in there for different reasons by different people. And one other thing I should mention, just kind of overall, that's very interesting to us about this work in consumer survey, is while we talk about these rankings and relative rankings, consumers are quite heterogeneous. In other words, as we look across the U.S. consumer, there are niche markets even for our lowest rank, low carbon beef product. We mentioned the greenhouse gas. There are some consumers that value that highly. Most do not, but some do. And you can go down across all of the different attributes we have examined in this study as well as others, and we find a lot of heterogeneity. And what that means is there is opportunity for differentiated beef product offering in the U.S. A lot of different product attributes and labeling that will appeal to some, but always keeping in mind the most important ones will matter.
Yeah, so all consumers are not the same, which is why we have some of those niche products. So from this survey, and Philip and Ted, I'll ask you guys, you've thought the most about it. What are some of your take homes that you would want to share with a beef producer from what you learned from this research?
So one of the most important take homes, again, that this study I think reveals is while there are certainly initiatives to try to be more sustainable, and that's a good thing, right? We want to produce beef that is profitable, that's supporting local communities, that's not environmentally hazardous, or that's not, you know, contributing problems there, that's socially acceptable. All of those are good things. But what we've got to be very careful about is if we impose certain rules, regulations on the industry to meet certain criteria or follow certain processes, that those come with costs, you know, and if you add costs to the industry, you're going to immediately affect price. One of the most important factors that affects the demand for the product. It is a major component of consumer purchase preferences. So it's just really important that I think as we go down the industry from a policy perspective of carefully evaluating the trade-off of, say, imposing a regulation around or some metric of measuring greenhouse gases or something else, that it can't come with added costs or it will be problematic for the entire industry. It could do definitely more harm to the industry than it can help it.
I think one of the things that comes across to me thinking from an individual producer standpoint is the animal welfare type of aspect and the high ranking that got in the survey. And so when producers are talking to the general public and consumers about sustainability, that should probably be one of the things that they focus on, and that, you know, talk to them about the how they take care of their animals and just all the work and all the vaccine protocols and all the health protocols and all that kind of stuff that goes into making sure those animals are taken care of well. And so, because I think that goes a long way with the consumer based on what we see in this survey.
The observations that we do for animals, the nutrition, the whole plan. And I like, Ted, I really like your point of if we add costs, we have to be cautious that we don't offset the number one or one of the top drivers, which is the price of the product that goes to consumers. So there's going to be a trade-off with any of these. And that's why this work is so important. I appreciate you guys sharing that. I know there's publications and work in process where we'll be able to get more details on both those, but I appreciate you sharing on that today. And I want to switch gears a little bit, and I want to talk about from the producer perspective, because there's some more projects you've been involved with, and we're going to talk a little bit about records on the cow-calf operation. And I'd ask you to think about, if you have a cow-calf operation, what are your top one or two records that you keep, and you may not be able to limit it to one or two. And then I'm going to ask these guys, put you on the spot a little bit, and say, if you have to narrow it down to one or two things that you're going to keep, Bob, I'll start with you. What are a couple of things you'll keep?
Well, a couple of things that I think are really important, you know, from as a veterinarian is keeping track of which animals got sick and which animals, you know, died. Because I think that those don't happen randomly, that there's a cluster that, and I can work up the health problem by identifying, you know, really which animals got sick.
Bob, you did. I was worried about limiting you to two, but you did spectacular.
I know.
Excellent. But Philip, can you limit to a couple?
I think a couple things that are high on my list are weaning weight of calves, and then how many cows were exposed to the bull. Because the pounds of calf weaned per cow exposed, to me, is the number one metric to evaluate your herd. It encompasses nutrition, genetics, and reproduction. And so that is a very key metric in my mind to evaluate a cow-calf operation.
Absolutely. So you're going to keep a couple, but you're going to use them to make an index or a metric of pounds weaned per cow exposed. Mm-hmm. I like that, Philip. Brian?
So I'm just actually going to add on to what Bob said. So it's just, if you're going to keep the treatment records, you just add a couple more columns and you start tracking product administration. So I want to know what product, and I want to know the treatment date, because, and it does a couple things for me. One is if I'm collecting that information, I can go back and look at that if I have questions about efficacy of the product. So if I get an impression that something isn't working, then I can go back and I can look at my records and look at the actual data and say, is it working or not? The other thing that keeping track of treatment records does for me is it keeps me out of hot water as far as violative residues go. So I want to make sure that anytime an animal gets a treatment, a lot of those products, whether we're talking a vaccine or an antibiotic or even a dewormer, they'll all have a withdrawal time. So I need the records to go back to look to before any animal leaves my farm into the production chain, whether that's the sale barn, a feed yard, or directly to slaughter. I need to check those records to make sure I don't have any animals that are still under that withdrawal time.
Great point, Brian, because whether it's a cull cow or even a big calf that I'm weaning, I don't want to send them out if they're still under a withdrawal time from some previous treatment. Ted?
So, you know, I'm going to think holistic on this because everything these guys have talked about ultimately drives me to a couple of things. One is, how do I use this information to improve management decision-making? So for Phillips, do I use it for culling decisions perhaps or retention decisions? For the health management components, are we making progress? Are we having, you know, issues that are reducing the profitability of this operation that I need to get more aggressive about dealing with, for example, on the health management? And ultimately, then I'm going to bring that all together and say, okay, at the end of the day, I'm going to use this to monitor my economic combined opportunity in this herd and where my weak points are, where my points for improvement are.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what ties it together even to the previous. We were talking about sustainability in the broad sense, the industry sense, but the economics of my operation are what's going to drive whether I can keep having this operation year over year, right? If I've got to be productive and I've got to have something to measure. And you guys, Bob and Ted, you guys had a little bit of an advantage because you did a survey that looked at what producers find is most important and what should be collected. Tell me what did you guys find from that survey?
Well, actually, some of the things that we talked about. So cow-calf producers, you know, want information about, well, when were they born? Did they need any treatments, you know, as a calf? What were their weaning weights? And those types of things. And one of the things that, so we had a graduate student that did these types of surveys. And one of the reasons was we wanted to develop some record keeping that would be relatively simple, so that it's easy to keep up to date with the record keeping, and yet would also collect the data that, or collect the information that producers really want. And so those types of things, birth dates, weaning weights, when treatments were given, did the cow become pregnant or not, those are all pretty straightforward and believable. And the list was pretty consistent for the most part across producers.
It was. And what's really important also to think about as we think about marketing these calves, especially downstream customers, call it backgrounders, feedlots, wherever you might be going with these cattle as you're selling them, they care about things that were done to that animal prior to them receiving it. And in particular, we also did some survey work with the graduate student Bob mentioned and of feedlots. And the commercial feedlots said, you know, the two things we care most about, aside, of course, from sex and weight, which we'll know anyway, but it's the things we don't know about when and what they were treated for on a pharmaceutical fashion. And so we don't go back and do a retreatment right away on something that they've already been treated with. And secondly, what was their implant protocol? And again, the reason being, these both directly affect how that feedlot processes those calves as they come into the yard. And of course, we don't want duplication, and we don't want, you know, things that might counteract each other. So not only is it important to have the on-ranch management data that helps individual decision-making, but it's also important to have these data easily accessible and transferable to the customer that buys the calves. It actually can impact their willingness to pay for those cattle.
So the ability to keep those records can be valuable, both making management decisions on the ranch and passing that information along if I have an easy way to do that, right? It's hard for me to, if I've got a paper copy, I've got something written down, I can certainly hand it to you, but that doesn't always work with some of our different commerce systems for, that doesn't always work with some of our different commerce systems for selling calves back and forth. You guys created an app called the CalfDex app, And that allows that potential transfer of information. You can find that on the App Store. There's some information on Ag Manager info that you can look up. And it allows you to collect it, share it. It's simple, convenient, kind of a digital red book, which leads us into, I do want to touch briefly, because Ted kind of led into this, the feeder calf marketing. Sometimes people say, well, I feel like I'm doing some of the right procedures, but I may not always get a premium. Does this CalfDex app, could it help with that scenario? Is there ability to transfer that information if I want to later on?
It's actually one of the things that we talked about as we were developing the CalfDex, which we wanted to have a system that if the buyer and seller, so seller would be the cow-calf producer and buyer, stocker, background, or feedlot. If they want to include information in that transaction, we wanted a way to make that easy to do. And a lot of times, the records that a lot of cow-calf producers keep are handwritten, or even if it's computerized, it's not easy to just transfer that information. So that was one of our goals from the very beginning, was to have a way. Now, again, it has to be agreed upon. It's kind of like if you've ever had an app where you have to send something to someone and they have to accept it. That's the way it kind of works, that both parties have to be interested in that exchange. And interested usually means that there's a value attached to that information. And so I think some of that information tied to marketing is already part of the marketplace and has been a long time, but usually that's been in the form of affidavits and other things like that. So I think this is another tool that allows us to kind of add information as part of the attributes that are marketed.
And Ted, with some of your conversations with those, and I'll say on the buyer side of the feeder calf, whether it's background or feedlot, those, they see some value in this type of information?
Well, absolutely. In fact, some of them even require it, put it out, as Bob mentioned, would say, before you market calves or cattle to us, we need to know these certain things about them upon entry. And it's very important to them, again, because it directly affects what they do, how they handle, and even whether they may or may not want to have those cattle in their yard. So they need it for processing decision making, even for longer run production management decisions they're making in their operation with those animals.
Well, and you, when you're talking about information that's nice to have, but we've turned the corner. So the recent changes with implant labels, now if we're from cow calf to another sector, no problem. But if we're talking about the transfer from a brack grounding facility to a feedlot facility, that implant information is critical, because there are some pretty big restrictions now because of the way they're enforcing the labels on implants. So it's not just nice to have. It's like Ted said, it's required almost.
Yeah, it was nice to have, I think, when they started working on the app, and now it's need to know.
One thing just quick, CalfDex, calf DEX. So the quick, easy access to it. You do an app or Android store search and you'll find it.
Yeah. And I think one of the cool things that you guys have done is made that many records programs have every different record included that you could want. You guys have narrowed this down to the basics. It's pretty simple. It's easy to enter, and then you can export that data. And then to be clear, we talked about sharing, but if I don't want, let's say I'm not a good sharer. For example, let's say I'm not good at sharing.
I can picture this.
You can picture this scenario? Okay, let's say I'm not good at sharing. Can I still do that with the app, not share?
Absolutely. Yeah. This is definitely a situation where it's set up that sharing of information can occur. Now, the place where it's maybe the best talk, and we didn't mention this, was on the same ranch. Maybe, two or three people might be checking cows and things like that. And that is one of the disadvantages of paper records, is only one person can hold the paper records at a time. With this CalfDex, each person that has the app on their phone can have real-time updates to know what other people are doing. So that kind of sharing, almost everybody likes. Sharing between sectors, that's only if both people
agree.
Agree.
So excellent. I think great points there. And you guys have done some really applicable research. And Ted, enjoy having you back on and getting a chance to visit with you a little bit about these things. And if you have questions, follow-up discussion, anything you'd like us to talk about, you can send us an email at bci@ksu.edu.